Alright, everybody, here we go. This episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Unity, your free personal media server. Make it easy to connect your devices and get unlimited access to all your content on the go. Just visit younity.com to get Unity for free. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 284 for Thursday, April 21st, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. I'm recording in the past or the future. We are on a time-traveling podcast.
Pulling back the curtain here. Wouldn't even know.
I know. So here's what's up. It's been a weird... It's always a weird month. Nothing is ever normal around here. So if you think like we're just hanging out writing about things, it's not quite that way. So the past few weeks we have had... By the way, hi, I'm Phil. Did I say that already? I can't remember. Yes? No?
Well, you've said it twice if necessary.
All right, that's just fine. In case you're listening to me and don't know who I am. So the past couple weeks we've had some pretty major phone launches. We had the HTC 10 last week. We had the LG G5 the week before. I forget, we had something weird the week before. Maybe the week before that was the last like all Q&A podcast we did.
And we had the Huawei P9.
Well, we haven't actually talked about that yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know that the phone happened.
Yeah, Alex has that. I actually have one as well. So I think maybe next week we'll talk about the P9. But because we've had those sort of special edition podcasts where we only talk about like one device, we haven't really kept up on emails and voicemails. And I felt bad about that because I know people take time out of their lives to send them in and they look forward to hearing them. So I wanted to do something about that. I'm actually on the road next week, or as you're listening to this. Actually, hopefully I'm finally on my way home. I really hope so. But I didn't want to go another week without doing voicemails and emails and stuff. So we have myself and Andrew and Jerry here. Say hi, boys.
Yo. Hi, boys.
Very good. And I just wanted to catch up on all that and not get them out of the way, but give them the time they deserve and not worrying about trying to do them when I'm running around on the road and stuff. So we're going to do them early. How about that? So if there's like any giant news of the past couple days that we've missed out on, we'll catch up on that next week. It's entirely possible you're listening to this podcast via Google Play Music, maybe, if NPR is correct. So wow. We'll see. That would be exciting. That would be worth, maybe not quite a whole nother podcast, but we'll see. So, voicemails and emails, and we're not even doing like live questions from anybody this week. So I want to give everybody the attention they deserve. That sound good to you guys?
Sounds great.
Sounds good.
Cool. So with that, we shall start. Oh, by the way, podcast@androidcentral.com. Send in your own stuff. Record your voicemail. Just email it to us. Record it on your phone. It works surprisingly well.
And this is living proof that we will answer that question.
Eventually. Maybe. We might possibly even accurately.
So. We will aim to answer that question or attempt to.
Yes.
Can we set the bar any lower?
We will endeavor to at some point at least open the email. How about that?
Boom.
Yeah. All right. So let us start with, in no particular order, other than alphabetical, Anthony.
Hey there, Android Central. This is Anthony, and I'm coming to you from Dayton, Ohio. I've been listening to you guys for almost 4 years now, actually. But anyways, today I have a question about adaptable storage on my NVIDIA Shield tablet. And I have the first-gen Wi-Fi only model, which comes with 16 gigs, if you guys remember. I use it primarily for watching a movie while in flight, reading digital magazines here or there, or games like Telltale's Minecraft or Walking Dead. And like you guys might be able to guess, just from that, my storage is already full up. So I've been looking into throwing a huge SD card into it and adapting it to expand its internal storage, quote unquote. But I wanted to step back and ask you guys first, with Android's poor ability to manage apps on external storage and manage app data on external storage, what would you do in my situation short of buying a new tablet? Is adaptable storage a smart option? Or better question is it my only option? So thanks for your time and thanks for the answers and keep up the great work.
Let's actually start with one thing because I was guilty of this the past week or so as well. The actual name is adaptable storage. And at some point, I think I was saying adaptive, maybe on the last podcast.
And I think a lot of people say adopted.
Yeah. So the actual name is adaptable. And I actually did just go look it back up. And the reason it's called that, this is right here in the developer pages, is Android 6.0 introduces the ability to adopt external storage media to act like internal storage. Simple enough, right?
Right.
Except it's correct. Not quite that simple. So yeah, first, Jerry, let's answer the question.
Which question?
So he's got a 16 gigabyte Shield tablet. Is it worth popping in a big giant SD card, or should he just look at buying a new tablet?
No, he doesn't need a new tablet. The first thing he needs to do is what is the source of the movies he's watching? Can he just put a big SD card in there and just use it to store his movies and shows?
Right. That was my initial thought, is that you don't have to. You know, adoptable storage is just an option. It's a choice.
All right, so let's back up. Why do you want to use adoptable storage? Why is it better than just using an SD card and it's not native, the way we're used to using them?
Let's say I have an Android One device that only has 4 or 8 gigabytes of internal storage.
These are low-spec devices, low RAM for emerging markets.
But they run the latest version of Android, so they can use the adoptable storage feature. If 8 gigabytes of storage, that's just a nominal number. If that's not enough for me, I can put 128 gigabyte SD card in there. It takes over the internal storage. And now I have 128 gigabytes of internal storage, all managed as one block. That a lot of apps can't put themselves on the SD card. A lot of encrypted application data can't put itself on the SD card. So there are plenty of use cases where 4 or 8 gigs of internal storage just isn't enough.
So the important thing to note here is that once you set it up as adoptable, apps don't make a distinction between being on the SD card or the internal storage anymore, right?
No.
It's all the same. So I know that he mentioned, poor handling of apps on the SD card. I mean, historically, yes, because it's a different volume and there are issues there. But once you put in an SD card and say that it's all the same storage, apps don't care. They don't know. They're just going on to a big blob of storage.
Correct.
While he was talking, I was grabbing my Shield tablet, and this is the first time I had put an SD card in it. And it does the same thing as every other device. It says, set up your SanDisk SD card. Would you like to use it as portable storage or would you like to use it as internal storage? And you just check the box and you tell it what you want it to do.
And it will format itself and mount itself automatically.
So
right,
I ran into something, and Jerry and I have talked about this already, with the HTC 10. So like a lot of new devices, actually, it only comes with 32 gigabytes of internal storage. So I popped I think it's a 200 gigabyte card in there, which, by the way, it's a 200 gigabyte card, but because of the way we do the math on these things, it's actually 180. So I'm using it as adoptable storage, but I've also been playing around with that LG Cam 360. And it, connects to your phone via Wi-Fi Direct to move things back and forth, but I cannot save pictures and video from it to the HTC 10 because the app just can't handle adaptable storage properly. That was kind of interesting.
Yep. It's
only time I've run into that so far. But
something like the 360 camera will need such a high transfer rate that an SD card's probably not fast enough all the time. And if your storage isn't fast enough, it rather than write videos that are all messed up, it just chooses not to write them at all.
Right. So that's one of the things here, is that if you're going to go adoptable, even if you have you want to go for a high quality, high speed card, first of all, but it's never going to be as fast as pure internal storage.
Right. And it's not even close when you start looking at numbers.
Of course. And so, of course, it's going to have no problem playing back a movie or storing pictures or videos, 1080p videos or whatever. But neither will that SD card if you put it into regular SD card mode as removable storage. So depending on the app, I think Google Play Movies stores the SD cards, right?
I am not sure. I don't want to say yes
or
no.
I will have to check on that. I can even do it while this podcast is going. But that, or if they're local movies especially, he'll have no problem just putting a whatever MKV file or MP4 or M4A, whatever, onto that SD card, popping it in and playing it through whatever player he wants, even if it's just internal storage or removable storage.
Right.
Part of me kind of wishes I hadn't used adaptable storage on the M10.
Well, I wouldn't. I don't. I see the use case for very low end. You know, if you've got a Moto G or an Android One phone, yeah, get your good fast SD card, use it, and pray that in 6 months we realize that this wasn't a bad idea and your SD card is burned out from being written to so much. I don't think that'll happen, but you know, it's always the potential there. This hasn't been around long enough on enough phones to really know how it's going to work.
Yeah, and the one thing that I think about there is, especially on a 32 gig phone, but even on the 16 gig tablet, if you're able to put your big files there, so your movies and your music, you're probably not taking a lot of pictures on your Shield tablet. That can all go on the external SD card, no problem. You don't have to think about the, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of situations in which you're full to the brim at 16 gigs and you would really like it to be, you know, overlap the two storage media.
Now, if you were, there are some multi-gigabyte games that are really fun to play on a Shield tablet. Mm-hmm. Those can be a hassle. Some of them won't save assets to external storage. Some of them will. And then when it's time to play, you just notice that it doesn't play as smoothly because stuff's stored on the SD card. And, you know, your 16 gigabyte tablet, if you put on 3 of these 4 gigabyte games, you're done.
Right.
But for movies, yeah, dude, get you 128 gigabyte card and fill it up with movies and watch them. I think you'll be satisfied with how it works and how well it works.
Right. And so Google Play Movies does let you just go into the settings and define, I want to download to the SD card versus I want to download the internal. And you can just hit download on anything. So, I mean, he could be using a different kind of app, but local videos or Google Play Movies, yeah, you can just download those. And those are large. I was loading up a tablet for my girlfriend on a flight that we just took, and I didn't realize, you know, that HD movie that's an hour and 45 minutes long or whatever is several gigabytes.
Yep, they're big.
And, you know, I was trying to download it in the lounge Wi-Fi at LAX, and it's like, you know, that's not going to be done in 45 minutes even. So loading these up well ahead of time is definitely the best way to go.
I always wait till the last minute. And then
that was my problem. we were watching the streaming before download, and it, you know, finished 3% by the time we had to catch our flight. So
every single time.
Yep.
And the worst is when you're in like a, not a strange city, but just some city where, you know, you're not on your own Wi-Fi and yeah, be smart.
You get spoiled by good Wi-Fi at home versus what you find all about. But I think just to put a bow on it overall, adaptable storage is not, you know, some magical savior thing unless you have, you know, a device with really low internal storage in which adaptable storage is kind of a necessity. Right. You may be able to get away with normal, just removable SD card, you know, standard stuff. That, I mean, that's what we see on the G5 and the GS7. That's how it's set up by default, and you don't have an option aside from some hackery to do adaptable. And, you know, you get by just fine.
You know, I still haven't actually, like, tested to see what happens if I pop the card out. Let me just
You're
do
not
that
gonna
right
like
now.
It. You're not gonna like it.
Yeah? What's gonna happen?
Well,
let's see. I just took it out on the M10, Jerry.
And
SanDisk SD card missing. Reinsert this device.
Yeah.
To use the app's photos or data the SanDisk SD card contains, reinsert it. Alternatively, you can choose to forget this storage if the device isn't available.
Ooh, I wonder what happens.
If you choose to forget, the data the device contains will be lost forever. You can reinstall the apps later, but their data stored on this device will be lost. Do I push the button? Do I do it?
I mean,
everybody waiting at home is
take screenshots when you do it, please.
You'll end up with your Google account information intact and everything you've ever downloaded or installed or adjusted or settings are gone.
Couldn't take screenshot due to limited storage space or it isn't allowed by the app or your organization.
Because you have no storage. You took it out.
Right.
It doesn't know where to write.
I'll put it back in there.
So since I already put a bow on it, but we can go even further. So once you adopt an SD card into your phone, you don't take it out to like put pictures on it or to pull pictures off your card. And like, if you want to pop it into somebody's camera or somebody's computer to a lot of people transfer photos back and forth. You're going to have to go back to, plugging it in over USB and transferring photos that way or using Dropbox or something.
And once you make a card adoptable storage, you better make sure you use online backup services because you're pretty much done.
Right. What if that SD card failed instead of removing it?
Which I do, which is why I don't really worry about it. And how I'm able to do this job in the first place.
I mean, geez, we switch phones so often. Yeah. It's like not even an issue.
I mean, it really is incredible when I stop to think about it. Like I can stop using this phone, pick up a new one and be right back where I was like an hour later. And actually it's been a pain this past week or so because I was running around with the G5 up in New York and then picked up the M10 while I was there. And I'm still doing camera tests with both of them and taking pictures in the same places with both of them. And it's like, oh crap. Now I got to figure out like which pictures were which. I just can't flip through Dropbox like I do normally and save them out of there. It's like, I didn't think that through very well.
I want to change the subject for just one second.
Sure.
Y'all are absolutely wrong about the finish on the G5. This feels wonderful.
Oh yeah. You like it?
I love it.
I don't think the finish is bad. I just think it's different than what people expect when you hear a metal phone.
Reminds me I used to work in places that process chemicals and work on
this
the
explains
machinery.
So much.
Yeah. The machinery itself that handles them has the same type of very thick finish over the metal. And this is exactly what it feels like. I love it.
I mean, it's really not unlike what's on the Nexus 6P. It's just thicker, I think.
But I like it a lot. And I just wanted to tell somebody. So I'm telling you and whoever's listening.
All right. Next voicemail. This comes from Dominic.
Hey guys, it's Dominic from Oklahoma City. First of all, go Nexus 6P for the win.
Oh, how about that, Jerry? How about that?
Yes.
I've had it for about a month and a half and absolutely love it. Okay, on to my question. So I called in a couple of months ago about switching from my first gen Model 360. And now that it's on 6.0.1, when I look at my watch, the cards are in ambient mode for a split second. And they turn white like they should. Cool. Well, it bugs the crap out of me. I can't stand it. So I was wondering, do all Androidwear smartwatches do this? They're on 6.0 or 6.0.1? If you guys could let me know, that'd be awesome. And more importantly, does a second gen do that? If it does, I might wait for the third gen to come out and see what happens. So absolutely love the show. You guys keep it up.
Androidwear is still a mess for me.
They all transition exactly like he's seeing.
Yeah.
The issue is the original Moto 360. The processor in it just takes longer and you notice it more. When you raise your wrist, if you've got a bunch of stuff going on like on the Huawei watch, sometimes you catch it for a split second before it transforms. But on the old 360, I can see that happening every time and you notice it.
Yep.
So that's not really an answer, but yeah, they all do it. You notice it more because that hardware is older. If you bought a second gen 360, you'd still see it once in a while.
I mean, is it just me? But like, let me put my watch back on now and look at it. All right,
I wouldn't even know where to find my Android Wear watch to put it back on. So I think I already answered your question.
Oh, no, look, I still wear it every day because for me, it's awesome getting rid of emails very quickly.
Yes.
But just so often I end up with some notification not a notification, but like an old Google Now card or some app that was reinstalled on the watch like 2 weeks ago.
My watch wants to tell me the score of the Orioles game 700 times a day now. I swipe that thing away.
It doesn't seem to, like, the Google Now sync between the watch and the phone is, it, I guess it's not really synced at all, right? It's kind of just its own thing. You can swipe away that Orioles scorecard, and it's just still sitting there on your phone.
It'll come back. It'll come back on the watch, I'm telling you.
Exactly. I kind of feel that way about Google Now in general. It's just kind of stagnated a bit, but man, Android Wear has just not done it for me.
No, I mean, I told you my thing about taking pills every morning. It's just like, all right, I have my reminder, and then I have to turn it off on every other phone too. You know, I hit done.
Exactly.
Done, 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 done. So. Anything else to add on that?
The Moto 360 is just really slow.
Yeah, time to upgrade.
There's your thing. Yeah.
The people that said when it first came out it wasn't going to be very future proof, you have been vilified.
That thing's been hanging on for a long time now.
All right, let's do another one. Here comes Josh.
Hey guys, my name is Josh, and I'm an architect in Tennessee, and I have a quick question for you. My wife and I are building a new home, and of course I designed it, and I'm wanting to use Nest products in my home, Nest thermostat, the Nest smoke detector, and I already have a Nest cam and looking to add some more. My question to you guys is, should I do this with all of the recent news about Nest? Just wanting your opinion on that, and thanks for taking my question, and enjoy listening to the podcast. Thanks.
So all the news about Nest is a couple things. One, it's a story, a couple stories that came out in the information, which is generally pretty heavy on anonymous sources, but this one actually had real sources, that, you know, there's a lot of unrest at Nest, and people are unhappy. And I have two thoughts on that. One is, I don't know what the hell's going on at Nest. Two is, people are always unhappy everywhere at every job. That's just the way things are. It happens. Three is, all right, maybe there's a problem. Maybe there's actually stuff going on. Now, the other thing was, Nest had bought a company. I don't remember the name of it offhand. Do you?
It's called Revolve.
Yeah. They had bought this company a long time ago, and, you know, are shutting it down, basically, are shutting down the products that in the connected products that this company had.
They're cutting off the back end service on top of no longer supporting the products. So they're just calling it a day.
To be clear, that means the products will no longer work.
Right.
In a month.
And they've said, I saw them say somewhere that, you know, they're going to help the people who own these things somehow. Now, I mean, to be fair, these aren't a lot of products we're talking about, right? It's not like Nest just suddenly said, you know, that Galaxy S7 that millions of people are buying? Not going to do it anymore. That's not what they're, I mean, it sucks if you have it, but it's just not nearly the same scale, right? But, I mean, this could happen with any product anytime, right?
Yeah. I mean, it of course it can. And I don't think that it's inherently a terrible idea. I mean, the nice thing about Nest here is that he's talking about, okay, sure, they're not, I can guarantee you that Nest is not going to be around working the same way 30 years from now. That's just not, let's be honest with ourselves, and we'd say that they're not going to be working in the same capacity. Does that mean that you can't get your value out of them in the next 20 years for that couple $100 thermostat? You probably can.
And the best thing is he's building a house from the ground up. And what I would do is, when you contract with the people who are doing the building, where you want your thermostat or where you would want a remote camera, have them use conduit instead of just running the wires and pulling them through a hole in the wall and tying a knot in them, waiting for you to put a thermostat on. Have them run conduit into a junction box.
This is the idea for every part of the home, your home theater and your internet connection and everything.
That way you have a raceway between where you'll want your central thermostat and your outside heating unit, and the ability to put any wires you need in it for any future product. The same way with security cameras or smoke detectors. And yes, it's a bit more cost up front. I mean, it's going to double whatever you're paying for technicians to install your HVAC controls. It's going to double the initial cost, but it's future proof until the house is torn down.
Yeah, and that's not that means you're not putting the point of failure on Google or Nest or, you know, anybody else for any of these specific products, because I understand it is scary if you're trying to build something that all talks to each other and you're not someone who, you know, like Phil already had a thermostat and so he just had to pull that one off the wall and put the Nest one on. This is, he's trying to think from the beginning to go Nest, and I don't think it's a bad idea at all, but just build in a way that you're not reliant on Nest.
Trying to think what other, and this is kind of what I was getting at last week before. I wrote a little something on like how some of my favorite connected products in my house are kind of stagnant right now. I mean, I have absolutely no reason to buy one of the newer Nest gens, and I think I have second gen. Sonos hasn't really changed a lot since I bought it. I mean, they add new services every now and then, but it essentially does the same thing. Like we still don't have an outdoor Sonos speaker or just, I mean, any number of things we might want that it doesn't have. But yeah, and I think Nest is a relatively painless one because of the way it hooks together, right?
Right. And the smoke alarm's just, you know, it's a standalone unit too.
Centralized computational thermostats. I was trying to think of the right way to say that. A smart thermostat, that idea is never going away. If Nest fails and Ecobee fails and everybody else, Honeywell, everyone that makes one fails, there will be another there to take the place because
right, you're not going to not have heat.
Right.
If you're they announce that the Nest is being shut down in 2 months or something, you're going to be able to get another thermostat.
I haven't invested in smart lights yet because I kind of don't know where to start still.
That's tough, and that's a whole podcast we could talk about because it's a mess.
To me, that's more than just one product, you know? That's like, yes. All right, now I need a hub that works with other things, and if that hub were to get shut down, that would be a bigger deal.
Right, and I can watch you guys just toil away with this stuff, and you know, I rent an apartment and I can't do anything, so probably saves me from myself.
You need that clapper so you can just clap your hands and the lights turn on.
I just plug it into everything.
Tell you what, let's take a quick break and pay some bills. When we come back, more of your questions. Oh, wow, we've got a lot to go still. We're not going anywhere. Hang on, be right back. So it's spring. It's time to clean things, your yard, your house, your home, your room, your face. We can help you do it. Go to harrys.com, use the promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase. You've heard us talk about them before. We're going to talk about them again. Harry's offers high quality razors and blades for a fraction of the price of the big razor brands. Listen to me. I got a beard. I know. You know that. I got to do a little maintenance. I got to do a little cleanup. It's spring. That's what we do in spring. And there's no better way to do it than with Harry's starter set. It's an amazing deal. $15. Razor moisturizing shave cream or gel. I love the gel. And 3 razor blades. And when you need more, they're just $2 each or less. An 8-pack is just $15. A 16-pack is just $25. You can't get a better deal anywhere, boys and girls. And they ship right to your door. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to find somebody to unlock one of those things. They send them straight to you. So get started with a set. Again, handle 3 blades, shaving cream, $15, shipped right to your door. Go to harrys.com. That's HARRYS.com. Use the promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase. Okay, I'm back. Are you back? Are we back?
We're here.
Are we all back? Jerry? Is Jerry not back? Did we lose
I'm
Jerry?
Back. I muted myself to make sure I didn't make any noise, and then I forgot I muted myself.
All right, back to the voicemails. Here we have Mike.
Hey, guys. Quick question about Android viruses. My wife's phone is having a problem.
Whoa, what? Somebody got up in Mike's face.
Somebody crossed the Ecobee and the Nest streams together there.
No, I probably didn't properly save things.
Well, I know it wasn't Jerry or I, so
that's true.
Just saying.
The real question is, did it do that when I exported it the first time? Ah, crap. All right, I'm going to have to go back and find Mike's in a minute. In the meantime, we will skip Mike's, and we will go to Patrick and hope that I did it right.
Hey, guys, Patrick here. Is there any way y'all can start putting in some sort of a controlled audio sample on your reviews? You know, like everybody has the same mic, the same recording software. Everybody's one or two ticks below max. Everybody is 12 inches away from the direction of the speaker, for instance. And then y'all put that MP3 on the review. That way we can hear how loud, how soft, how bassy, how tinny, how anything a speaker is. It doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not asking for, you know, you to go spend $1,000 on mics or anything. I'm just wanting something. And it's like the one thing y'all never touch base on. And I honestly try not to go anywhere but Android Central. And it sucks whenever I can't get the information I want. Anyways, I'll yak at y'all later. Y'all be good. Bye-bye.
Fair question. It's actually something I used to do every now and then. I would like stick the speaker. I forget what I used. I think I used the podcast intro music, actually. And I would stick the speaker up next to the microphone here in the office. Mm-hmm. And caveat with, you know, hey, I'm sticking the speaker up next to the microphone here in the office. Here's right, what it
so
sounds
this is
like.
One of those things that's the mic. Even, you know, one of our studio microphones here that we use for the podcast is never going to do it justice for how it sounds to your ears in a room when you're listening to something like a loudspeaker on a phone. It's always going to sound terrible.
Yeah.
And it only serves as a purpose of comparing one to the other, you know, because you have that consistency of the microphone. It's tough. It's not really something that you're going to get too much out of by getting that clip there.
I got the answer.
What's that?
A decibel meter. They're cheap.
I have one of those, actually.
They're cheap.
Sure, that'll give you how loud it's going to be.
You say, okay, we all put a decibel meter 16 inches from the phone, and we play this particular file, and we tell you what number the decibel meter says. That won't tell you exactly how loud it is, but it can tell you how much louder or more quiet it is than a handful of other phones.
Right. And that won't tell you how, you know, blown out it is when it gets the max volume and you can't understand what it's saying. And that's the problem.
I forget. I wonder what phone I bought it for. Maybe one of the HTC ones.
Yeah. The M7. I remember when you got it for the boom sound.
And I got it and it was almost kind of like, we can do that in here, but there's so much ambient noise anyway that I think it just didn't work as well as we thought it might.
I like the idea of spending $10,000 on mics and equipment. Phil, if you want to do that.
Now, I really do like the idea that we should probably spend a little more time specifically talking about the speakers, because I think we're all a little jaded in the fact that we say most of these phone speakers just really suck.
Yes.
And it's really hard to say anything nice about the speaker on like the Galaxy S7 because, yep, it's a tiny little loudspeaker and it kind of works, you know, for 10 minutes when I'm walking around the house and I don't want to hook it up to a speaker or have headphones in or whatever, and I can listen to a podcast.
At least with the M10, and by the way, we're kind of calling it M10, and that's fine.
You are. I don't know about everybody else.
Somebody was chastising me in Twitter or something for calling it the 10. Oh, it was Michael Fisher. That's who it was.
But it is.
The 10.
It's a really great ploy to get you to say HTC's name again, because the name really only makes sense when you say HTC 10.
But like in this case, I have stuff I can talk about the speaker. I can talk about how the earpiece, you know, does the highs and they come straight at you, which is fine. And I hate to really call it a subwoofer because it's kind of not. I mean, the mids aren't separated enough to make this a true subwoofer or anything, but the lower sounds come out the one on the bottom and it sounds different than when you have two front facing speakers, but not necessarily worse, I think. And it sounds like one pretty good normal smartphone speaker, which I don't really think you should ever use to listen to music if you can help it anyway, but
right.
You know, like the GS7 was better than the GS6, you know, by a good margin. The V10 has a pretty decent speaker, I think, but even
the
Nexus
6P has good set of speakers.
Yeah, but even then, you know, you're not going to quite get the same experience. I think you almost get a better experience when you have something like as bad as the GS6 was, then we can get pretty descriptive.
I mean, my test is can I play a podcast at full volume, set it on the bathroom counter and still hear it while I take a shower in the morning? And if it's capable of doing that, okay. It's good enough to be, you know, a phone speaker. I don't expect anything more than that. And, you know, I mean, they're little tiny speakers. How much can you expect?
Yeah.
I just turn everything off but notifications. I'll use my, well, I mean, no, if I want to actively listen to sound coming out of my phone, I use headphones. Right. So
sure. Yeah,
that's what we were going back to. It's difficult for me to say, oh, the HTC 10, I won't even go M10, sounds better than, you know, the Nexus 6P, because to me, they both sound like crap. You know, and not picking on those two phones. I'm just saying any phone.
Yeah, just smartphone speakers in general are not very, you know,
and many tablet speakers to that point. And that's speakers. Something where you would actually use the speakers.
I was joking in my briefing for the M10 that this thing's going to sound great when I listen to the Frozen soundtrack every damn night, which I have to do because my 5-year-old has to listen to that every damn night as she's going to sleep.
She's probably in school saying, my dad makes me listen to the Frozen soundtrack every night.
No, it's definitely her idea. Oh, man. It used to be, God, I mean, we used to listen to like Grace Potter every night with the other kid. And now it's just all Frozen all the time, man.
Let it go,
all right,
Phil.
I think I got Mike back. Should we try Mike again?
Yes.
Should we cross our fingers just in case? Here we go.
Fingers crossed.
Hey guys, quick question about Android viruses. My wife's phone recently had a problem where a bunch of apps got reset and she apparently pocket texted some friends. And she asked me, geez, could this be the result of a virus? And my answer was probably not. If you don't install apps outside the App Store, it's really, really unlikely that you would get a virus if any of those even exist. So my question to you is, do Android viruses even exist? And if you don't download apps from outside the App Store, is it even possible to get one? Thanks.
We've talked about this before, Jerry. Yes. What is a virus versus malware versus adware?
Versus just a shady app.
A virus is something that can affect your phone and duplicate itself without human intervention on another piece of equipment. That does not exist on Android. Technically, there are no viruses. We throw the word around as interchangeable with malware, but that gets a lot of people all bent out of shape. The more important question is Google Play 100% safe? And the answer is no.
Nothing is.
Nothing is. The App Store for iPhones is not 100% safe. All the companies, Windows Phone, Apple phones, Android phones, the companies do a really good job. You when you look at the number of applications that are there and the amount that are getting downloaded, and then you check it against the actual real problems that have been served to users from these stores, the numbers are insignificant. But it's not impossible. Insignificant does not mean it will never happen.
Insignificant doesn't sell newspapers, as we used to say.
Right. As far as your wife, no, that wasn't a piece of malware. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that your wife didn't click OK when some random thing she never heard of said it wanted to install herself on her phone, and that's what would be required for it to do that.
My question is, how did he get there in the first place?
Nothing can be installed. People are pretty slick and can force a download to your phone, but it just sits there unless you tap a button that says to install it. It sits there and can do nothing. The bigger issue and the real issue on all platforms is browser hijacking, where you get a cookie or a file set in your settings for the browser that you use. And every time you open the browser, it does something you don't want it to do. Usually they sit there and tell you, if you pay us $69, we'll fix your phone because it's filled with viruses and it's too unsafe for you to continue. That's a real problem. And Google and Apple, I know, are both working on what can we do to prevent this even more than they are now. It's nothing that's going to get better. Every time somebody in any of these technology companies finds a way to defeat what's going on now, the people that are causing these issues find something newer, better, faster, and easier for them to do. This is this is something that we have to deal with. And your best bet is to just stay current on all the software that you can stay current with. And other than that, you know, you want to be careful. If you don't know what you're doing, leave your phone set up the way it comes, where you can't download apps from other places. You can't install apps that didn't come from Google Play. That's a smart way to go.
And remember that Google has a whole bunch of behind the scenes things.
Yes.
Working on this as well. And that's something that I think gets lost in the shuffle so much.
Yes.
Is that they're not, you know, the apps, unknown sources button. I mean, that is not the only thing protecting you.
Right. The chances that you would download something, even with unknown sources enabled, you would download something and it would be able to install itself if it were dangerous, are very slim, because Google monitors that stuff. And as soon as the first few users install it, it reports back to Google what the application was doing. And on their server side, the servers that monitor the apps you have installed, they will tell your phone, no, stop this installation. And you'll get a notice telling you that you can't continue or you shouldn't continue. So it's not one of these things like you read so often that millions and millions of phones are affected. What that translates into is millions and millions of phones could be infected if you were to do this, 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 and this, and then disable this and this.
And that millions number generally comes from whatever the minimum OS level is for right. that device.
Right.
That does not mean millions of phones have it. They're just
or actively being used.
Yeah.
Now, we have seen some very serious malware. The one that got the biggest fuss made over it was the Stage Fright. And that wasn't
malware. That was
right,
a potential exploit.
And it's the odds that it could actually execute any random code were very, very low. The problem is it was so easy to see it in action causing trouble that it got super high priority to be fixed. And they're still working on that. Every update you get from Google, whether it's a security patch or a new version, a bump up in the operating system level, there's work on the Stage Fright and multimedia libraries.
But, and this was the important part, that was not the only safeguard in place for that thing.
Correct. That got blown out of proportion a little bit because it was so scary how easy it was to get around. And basically every phone was affected to one degree or another. Some phones on certain, you know, operating system numbers and from certain manufacturers were more affected than others. But every phone that's still in use was affected on some level, which made it very important to fix. Bigger ones that I don't understand why nobody seems to care. There's issues with the trust zone that are almost worked out. Google wants your stuff to be safe because they want the next phone you buy to be running their software. They work hard just the same way as every company does. I guess what I'm trying to say is we have to be diligent because this is something that can never be completely fixed.
Good
boy,
question,
I sound though. All doom and gloomy, don't I? I worry that one day, if I found the Stage Fright bug and I wasn't a responsible person and told Google, and instead I got a bunch of my friends and let's try to see what we can do with this to actually mess phones up. I figured it out, and then I got a video on Facebook to go viral and had 17 million people watch it and took over 17 million phones. That potential is out there.
And that'd be no good.
No, that would not be good.
Let's take one more break and come back all happy and shiny after that doom and gloom for a couple more voicemails. And then we'll get to some emails. So hang on, be right back. This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Unity. Unity is a personal media server that lets you easily access and share all the media and files stored on your computers from your mobile devices. No syncing, configuration, or hassle involved. All of your files are kept secure and private on your own computers. Unity simply creates a connection to let you access everything remotely. Visit getunity.com, that's getounity.com, to learn more and get Unity for free. All right, two to go. Are we ready?
We are ready.
I'm good. Ready. Anybody need to carb up or anything? Are we hydrated?
I finished my coffee, but I'm still good.
All right. Here we have, this one's a tiny bit long, but not bad. Here comes Ray.
Hi, guys. Ray from Phoenix, Arizona. Quick question. Two questions, actually. Number one, I have a QuickCharge 2.0 device, and I would like to buy a QuickCharge 3.0 device in the near future. However, I need to buy a power cord right now, another one for my current device. Will the QuickCharge 3.0 device work on a QuickCharge 2.0 device without catching my phone on fire? And will it actually QuickCharge? Number one. Number two, I have definitely noticed a varying degree of performance out of different cords from different manufacturers. I probably have 10 cords strewn throughout my car in my house, and 4 quick charge actual either wall plugins or car plugins. And the cords themselves, not the plugs, seem to be the variable. So I did download Amper, the app that seems to be what everybody recommends. However, I have run the tests and don't have the slightest idea what it means. Thanks again. Love the show.
All right. A few things.
So let's address the charger part first.
Yeah. So I've been using QuickCharge 3.0 chargers for a little while now. I've got some Transmart ones here. I've got some Anchors. What do I have over there? That's another Transmart.
Quite a few manufacturers.
I got a whole bunch. Generally speaking, and I think you should, you know, if you're buying a new one now, go ahead and buy a 3.0. I don't think you're losing out on that much if you've got a 2.0 and you're happy with it.
It should be completely backwards compatible with 2.0 and 1.0. It uses the lowest common denominator.
Right. If both pieces of equipment are Qualcomm quick charge compatible, not fast charge from Samsung or turbo charge from Motorola, but they actually are Qualcomm quick charge compatible, a 3.0 quick charge will charge a 2.0 quick charge phone just as well as the original charger that came with it.
Or I should say the highest common denominator, obviously, of speed. So even if you had an old quick charge 1.0, it'll still charge up as fast as the phone can take it, even though it's a 3.0 brick. It doesn't make a difference there. And you'll probably, although it can't be guaranteed, like Jerry was saying, can't necessarily be guaranteed if you have like a fast charge Samsung phone, but it should be able to boost up to the equivalent. But no, in any case, your phone's not going to catch on fire or anything like that. The charger will not put out too much.
I want to say that Samsung and Motorola will work exactly the same, but I can't be 100% sure that they follow all the specs. So,
as far as backwards compatibility goes.
And between QuickCharge 2 and 3, I think there's just not that much difference. I mean, yes, 3 is a little faster, but not so much that I'd be like, this 2 is horrible and upgrade all my stuff.
2 is dang fast.
Yes. But 3 is better on your battery.
Yes.
3 monitors better and sends out as much charge as it can all the time, rather than where 2 is, let's send out as much charge as we can until we reach this state, then we'll back it down. QuickCharge 3 sends as much as it can safely all the time.
Right, and that's the important thing about QuickCharge 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, Samsung fast charging, turbo charging, whatever. It's not about necessarily just throwing as much possible power and this new brick can just do super power. It's all about understanding what percentage the phone's at, what it can take, and smartly sending power to it so you get the best charge. That's why it's heavily weighted to, if you're in a low battery charge, you're going to get a faster charge and then it tops off after that.
Which leads us directly to his next question about the cords.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've had cables that occasionally end up with like a charge-only cable, and it doesn't do data.
Well, and that won't work with Quick Charge 3. I don't know about 2, but Quick Charge 3 needs to communicate.
I think data only works with Quick Charge 2, only because I have my Samsung phone plugged into one right now.
Data only?
But, sorry, you know, power only. No data pins.
Right.
But again, we're talking about Samsung there. You know, they could be doing something slightly different anyway.
And yes, cables make a difference. You're not crazy. Even if you can't understand what the numbers from the Ampere app are telling you, you don't need the Ampere app to know that some cables charge faster than others. That has a lot to do with the construction of the cable itself. I've got some Quick Charge 3 stuff here. I've got a very, very early one that Tron Smart sent me long before they became available. So this doesn't go for the ones you can buy now. And the charging cord just is horrible. I plug a phone in. It doesn't quick charge. It barely charges at all. It won't communicate with my computer. It's just a bad cable design. Well, they don't do that anymore. So like I said, I'm not knocking the company. This was an early version of a test product. But the same thing can happen with any cable. It can even happen with a very good cable that has seen enough abuse that it's no longer very good.
Yeah, that's why I've gotten, because I've come across the same thing. I mean, we obviously have an unmeasurable amount of USB cables laying around. And every once in a while, you pick one up that was, you know, 3 years old or something's been curled up in a drawer and it was, you know, abused before. That cable just needs to be tossed because, you know, you're going to plug it in and it's going to work. But, you know, you're probably not going to be charging at the same rate as that brand new Samsung cable that just came out of the box.
If you're hard on your cables, probably like I am, is it a good idea just maybe like once or not twice a year, but once a year, once every 2 years, just toss them all out, get new stuff?
Yes, I do that.
Especially if it's in the car. I know the ones in the car, you know, they get wound up and they get stuffed around and banged around a lot more than something on your desk.
Every year I buy 5 high quality, you know, micro USB cables in various lengths and a couple aux cables. And just throw away the ones I had from last year because I don't want them to go bad when I'm somewhere where I don't have a spare.
Yeah. And especially that's doubly so for the ones that I carry around permanently in my messenger bag and my travel bags. Right. Those are continually, you know, wound up, unwound, banged around, stuffed in pockets. You know, those get the absolute maximum wear. So I always buy, I'm going to buy a thick cable that's not going to get all ruined from being rolled up. And yeah, those wear out a lot quicker than the ones that are just plugged into a USB hub on my desktop.
I was in a weird position this week where I had like one USB-C cable and 4 things that needed to be charged by it. Like totally the opposite of my normal problem.
Yep. I've got a 5X, a Pixel C, and a Nexus 6P and the G5 here on my desk, and I only have 2 cables.
Yeah.
Whoops.
My bigger thing now is that I've been using the Galaxy S7 a lot, obviously, so I have wireless chargers. I have a few around. And then, you know, I switched back to using the Nexus 5X for a few days, and I was like, oh, now I have to plug in a USB-C cable right next to those on my nightstand and over here and over there. Oh, my gosh.
I have I call them a 6-banger, you know, a hub that does, like, 6 charging at once. And, I'm probably going to switch back to the GS7 soon, I think. But it's been nice not having to worry about it. Like just having everything be USB-C. It's been really nice.
Mm-hmm. It is great.
I haven't bought a Samsung quick charger wireless yet. So.
Before we let that point go, that is the only way to have wireless charging nowadays. Those fast chargers make a huge difference. Because I got one of just the plain slow wireless chargers from one of the Samsung Pay promotions or something. You set a Galaxy S7 Edge on that thing, huge battery. You set that thing on there for like 2 hours. It doesn't even make a dent in it because it just charged. It's like plugging it into a wall charger from 4 years ago. It's crazy how slow Qi is.
Yeah.
See, I'm on the opposite side of that. I have seen, especially the Galaxy S7 Edge, I've seen 2 cases where I don't know what happened. My phone was on this charger and I went to go pick it up and the screen was cracked. I think that some of these quick charge Qi chargers are getting too hot.
I almost have a feeling like it's something where the fan inside. I mean, these fast chargers do have fans inside.
And the fan, I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody that's making the chargers, but there are potential things that could go wrong there. So don't throw out all your old chargers.
Oh, I couldn't if I tried. They're just all over the place.
I still found it interesting that HTC was talking up its wall charger so much for the M10. Well,
from what I understand, it has built-in surge protection. Mm-hmm. If so, bravo, HTC. I've said several times in the past few years, why is nobody doing this? And if you've done it and you've made it where if I live somewhere, we get a lot of storms. I know Phil does. You people in the Midwest know what I'm talking about. Phil, have you ever had lightning hit your AC unit or the top of your house?
I had it take out, I forget what all it killed. I think it killed the receiver. It killed my cable modem. Yeah, so it happens.
Your phone is one thing that's one less thing to replace if it's got surge protection on it. So
yeah, and I mean, I don't travel anywhere without my travel surge protector either, because everything in the hotel goes right into that. And so it's nice to be able to have it built in. And the HTC 10's charger is not gigantic, right?
No, it's relatively normal size, I think.
That's good.
Yeah. Maybe just a tad longer than you're used to.
Surge protection doesn't need to take up a lot of room, especially if you know, if the HTC 10 charger got hit by lightning, it could be designed that, okay, the charger's dead. You have to buy another one, but hey, you just saved your $600 phone.
Exactly. If there's going to be a storm overnight, I don't plug in my computer while I sleep.
And that's still something that, sure, it didn't have to be bigger, but, you know, HTC spent an extra money on that, and that's coming right out of their bottom line. Of course, they're gonna try to market that a little bit, that you have the best possible charger here.
And that's something we should care about. These phones aren't cheap.
Yep.
And a lot of times, you know, obviously we switch phones so often that we don't even take the charger out of the box or the cable even. But for a lot of people, you know, they don't have 40 brand new chargers laying around. They're going to that's their time to upgrade to a new charger, as you get your quick charge 2.0 charger in the box or whatever.
Yep. All right. Last one. This comes from the one and only Rob Holly. I know Rob. Some of you up in New York might know Rob. So here we go.
Hi guys, Rob from North Jersey here. I'd like to pose a question raised on a competing site. Would you buy an Android phone made by Microsoft? Now, that phrase raises a whole lot of questions about what a Microsoft Android phone really means, since so many of the Microsoft surfaces, Cortana, Outlook, Bing, to name a few, are available on any Android phone already. So here's my definition: a phone with the design aesthetic of the Surface tablets, running Android, but with all the Microsoft services integrated, so I could do things like launch Cortana with a voice prompt and not have to actually touch the phone. And here's the kicker: access to the Google Play Store. Because that's what everyone complains about with Windows Phone, right? The app gap. So there's really a couple questions here. Would you guys be interested by a phone running Android, but with Microsoft services largely replacing the Google ones? And would Google even allow its services, specifically the Play Store, onto such a phone? Thanks for your input.
Rob should be on radio.
Yeah.
Rob. He's got a nice voice and a nice microphone to capture it.
Yep.
Rob is on radio. That's why.
Well, there you go.
Would you buy a Microsoft? I mean, look, anytime somebody says that, like, we said it the same thing about BlackBerry, right? Like, would you buy a BlackBerry?
That was my first thought.
Sure. And for me, it's not the fact that it says BlackBerry on it or has BBM in it. It's just, I'm not a big, I don't like it. I didn't get it.
And it's got to be a good phone. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft has clearly shown it knows how to make Android apps. And I have no doubt that if they really wanted to put their time and money behind building a nice piece of hardware and put Android on it and preloaded all their services, that it would be just fine. But they have to get all this other stuff right too. They're coming from a position where people aren't going to go buy that phone because it's got Microsoft services on it. It has to be a really good phone other than that. And I'm not sure that they could necessarily pull that off. Definitely not on the first try. I mean, it took them three generations of Surfaces to get to a point where the Surface was a really good device. And, you know, they're Windows phones. Of course, they run Windows phones, so that's an issue for some people. But there's also the part that, you know, the Lumia 950, not necessarily an exceptional piece of hardware.
Kind of disappointed. I've got one sitting here on my desk. It's right in front of me, actually, dead.
Right.
And it's, yeah, it's like a strangely cheap feeling phone, whereas like the 1020 was freaking awesome.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing. I mean, there's the further point that he was saying, no, Google is not going to let you have a phone with the Play Store that doesn't also have all of its, you know, base Google apps pre-installed. That's part of the deal of getting Google certification, getting the Play Store. Even then, I have no doubt that, I mean, Google would have no problem if Microsoft wants to play ball just like Samsung does. And,
correct.
You know, make a phone that can pass the technical certification and will have the apps pre-installed. I'm sure that they would have no problem with it. Just like if Microsoft made an Android tablet, you know, it doesn't make a difference. But just because it's from Microsoft doesn't mean that anybody's going to jump on it any more than any of the other great phones that come from proven companies that have made lots of great Android phones.
Well, I would not, simply because it comes from Microsoft with their services on it. And that's because I don't like Microsoft's terms of service and the way it's worded.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that you shouldn't. That just means that I understand the very few words that Google, you know, they tell me. I know all the things Google is doing. I don't like them all, but I understand them all. Microsoft is a 12-page document full of words that only a lawyer can understand, and there's too much weasel room about who and who they can't actually sell your data to, which partners they can sell your data to. I'm not into that. So no.
So if you're coming from a baseline where maybe you use a Surface Pro 4 right now and you're already like, that's fine.
Yep.
Microsoft, take my data. I've signed the end user license agreement. I don't care. Sure, you might be interested in that. The interesting thing though is that you can go to the Google store today and buy a Nexus 6P and you can turn it into a Microsoft phone if you want. You can sync all of your email contacts with your Outlook account. You can install every single Microsoft app. Sure, it's not going to have, you know, Cortana is not going to be a first class citizen in the same way that Google Now is for voice control or something like that. But other than that very small snippet of having some things pre-installed, you can download the Microsoft Launcher, whatever that thing was called. You can download all the services and you can set it up without, and you don't have to enter a Google account for anything other than apps if you don't want to. You can get there already pretty close, but so that's why I don't think that just having the Microsoft name on it, you know, would instantly rocket it, you know, to the top of the sales chart.
No, and part of it, he wanted, you know, better Cortana integration so that it's more like, you know, an always listening Google Now.
Sure.
And I get it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you're coming from the Surface Pro 4 and you're like, I would love to have this integrated experience, but I can't live with the Lumia 950 because God, why would you want to? I understand that, but you can get a lot of that experience now and you would get a pretty good idea of what, you know, what you'd be getting.
It is a good question.
It would be
great question.
It would be Microsoft's best selling phone of all time.
Oh, easily. It would outsell, you know, the Lumia 520 that sells millions and millions of devices.
I think it's a great idea. Because there are a lot of people out there like who aren't like me and get real value from Microsoft services. And for them, what they give away through the terms of service is a fair trade. I get that completely. Those people would have all of those Microsoft services that they already love, plus 1.5 million apps in the App Store. Well,
right.
Google Play. I'm sorry.
I think, unfortunately, the more likely scenario is it seems like they would do something work with CyanogenMod to get a specialized version of the OS or something like that.
I think Microsoft has their eye on the long game, and they will just continue to entice developers until they have 1 million of their own apps. And I applaud them for that.
Sure.
I got a good email today. 5 hours ago. I think it was on last week's podcast, which for me was like 2 days ago. Yesterday, I guess. Talking about the difference between a chamfer and a bevel. I was asking that.
Oh, God.
And he linked me to a Reddit thread that I thought was really good. Has a good picture explaining the difference between the two. A chamfer is like if you take a rectangle and you just lop off one of the corners. A bevel is when, say, the top edge is not even.
That's more of the difference. Trapezoid.
It's angled. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Sure. This word chamfer is just, the iPhone 5.
It's almost like you have to say it like snooty.
Right. The iPhone 5 existing brought this word into the gadget reviewer lexicon and just completely ruined us for, you know, ever looking at a thesaurus again.
That was Daniel. Thank you for sending that in, Daniel. And it was a really good example. Actually, I like it. Here's an interesting name. Dror, D-R-O-R. Says Google just announced a calendar service that wants to help me achieve my goals. Well, for that, Google wants me to tell them my personal aspirations. Privacy speaking, what do you think of that? If you haven't seen it, the idea is you tell Google Calendar, and I just got the update right before we started recording, actually. Say, I want to run 3 times a week, and Google's going to help you find time to do it. Well, I mean,
and it'll say at like 11:30 at night, hey, sure. you don't have anything on your calendar, so why don't you go run?
You don't have to use it. That's what I think.
Are you guys using the regular reminders where, you know, that's completely
user generated?
That's
what I'm using to take my pills every morning. And speaking of, you know, telling people personal stuff, there you go. it's blood pressure.
Because I'm not even using those. Even though I was somebody that, you know, heavily reliant on my calendar as kind of a to-do thing where I say, oh, this has to happen at this time.
Well, I mean, we should try it. I should stick in a goal of like go outside and walk for 20 minutes each day and see when it tries to slot that in there. And then if I actually follow it, say I tell it that, what am I telling Google? Am I telling Google that I don't walk enough, that I'm overweight and I need to walk more, that I like walking outside? I don't know.
It's built into this assumption that everything you do throughout the day would be in Google Calendar, which for me, I put a lot of stuff in Google Calendar, but I don't plan out my, you know, 12 hours a day blocking out time in which, you know, I'm free or not free. Google calendars for specific events that are happening at certain times or certain days or weeks. So it wouldn't really be able to infer a ton of information about when I'm actually free to do something versus when my calendar says I'm free.
Back to the original question for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
I always, whenever I have this discussion, I'm like, first off, never tell Google something you're uncomfortable with letting someone else know.
Sure.
Nobody at Google is reading any of your information. It's all in a big file server somewhere, and it gets assigned these unique numbers, and your name is not attached to it the minute it leaves your phone. But then you have to, the value you get from sharing that information, is it worth it? Is the trade-off worth it? If so, it's worth doing it to you. Do it.
For me, the trade-off of Google knowing that I have to take, you know, that I have to do something at a specific time every day, or, you know, the fact that I put in there and it says, take a pill. That's my reminder.
Right.
And, it, you know, so Google technically now knows that I take a pill at the same time every day so I don't get pregnant. No, not so I don't get pregnant.
The best thing about all of it is right now we know that Google guarantees they don't share any of our data with anybody outside of Google unless they have to hire another company to help them assemble the results. And if that happens, that company is bound by the same laws and the same conditions in the terms you agreed to.
The one that's really fascinating to me is Google Rewards that I wish I'd been using it earlier. You guys don't want to know how much money Andrew has saved up in that, by the way. He showed
it's triple digits, guys.
Wow. But yeah, like if you haven't used it, it's a short little survey. It literally takes like 1 minute to do. And then you get like say 50 cents of Google Play credit.
Yeah.
That can add up. That can absolutely add up. It's smart. It'll be like, hey, did you go to any of these stores over the, you know, past week or whatever? And it's absolutely places, you know, it's like 4 places I haven't gone and then the one that I know it's looking for that it knows I went to.
And it asks you questions so that it can tailor future questions to you.
Right.
Some surveys are not for money. They are simply to keep this flowing and keep giving you better surveys that you might actually have answers to.
There's one floating around now that asks, what, if any, of the following research companies have you ever heard of? Two of them are fake. If you choose either one, you're cut off for 30 days.
Oh, wow.
Because right. You're lying.
And they'll put up questions like, you know, select orange above to show that you're actually paying attention. Because, you know, people were obviously spamming through it.
Get my free 50 cents. Yeah,
exactly.
I haven't seen those yet.
It's smart. The location stuff, it's always funny when you're in a city because, you know, I live right next to three hotels and it goes, oh, did you go to the such and such Hyatt, whatever? And no, I live across the street. And it asks me over and over and over again. So, you know, obviously that just shows you that it's just an algorithm. There's nobody actually looking at it.
It takes that data. If you say, yes, I went to the Hyatt Regency, then you will get.
How'd you know?
Well, because your location was on. But then if you have opted into other services like Google Local or anything, you'll get a pop-up in Maps. Can you answer a few questions about the Hyatt Regency?
I've started getting a lot more of those. Yeah.
Yep.
I get a lot of those as well.
And that's why Google wants your data. But I always want everybody to remember that Google isn't sharing this with anybody else. And if that ever changes, they promise to give us enough notice to get all of our data out of there.
Yep.
So the rest is you decide if what you're sharing is worth the convenience you get.
Matt writes in that his 2013 Nexus 7 hasn't gotten the April security patch. Do you think it's the end of security patches for this device? Was there an announcement? Is there any way to sideload them?
You can
absolutely sideload them.
Yes. Well,
if it exists.
Right. The Nexus 4 still gets security patches here and there. Those aren't dead. Any security patches that your 2013 Nexus 7 needs are made available for it for now. Eventually, that'll stop. I think the 2012 Nexus 7 is done.
Yeah, I think that the distinction needs to be made. Is it that the security updates are available and they're not pushing to his device, or are they just not available? Yeah.
In his particular case, they're available and he just hasn't gotten it yet.
Yep.
Google takes the exact opposite approach from BlackBerry for this. Google meters them out very slowly. You look on the day that they announce they're shipping it out, it's hard to find somebody who actually has it because they send out a few and then they watch. They wait. They only want to break a handful of Nexus 7 tablets instead of 5 million.
Right, which is the way to do it.
My 2012 Nexus 7 and my 2013 Nexus 7 are completely bricked from OTAs. So they don't want, they just want it to brick my tablet, not yours.
I'm looking at the factory images right now, and the Nexus 7 absolutely has 601 factory images up.
I can't condone the way Samsung did it with the Galaxy S6 and the Galaxy S7, I liked seeing it instantly on some carriers, of course. I'm sorry if you didn't get it yet. But that's probably not the smartest way to do that. If I have a Galaxy S7 and I have to wait until May to get April's patch, I understand why.
Jesse has a question about the Nexus 6P and that bug where it would get stuck in landscape instead of portrait. Is that still a thing? I haven't used mine in a while.
Oh my God. It drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
if you can't tell
from what I understand, that's a hardware defect on some phones.
Yep. Jerry and I looked at it with a couple of sensor apps. The accelerometer absolutely knows which way the phone is facing upright.
It's supposed
on its
to
side.
Anyway.
Right. It absolutely knows. I put it flat on the table. And it knows it's not moving. It's dead flat at 0 degrees, and the software just does not rotate properly.
Now, Andrew was afraid to do this, but apparently, if you turn it face down on something like a mouse pad or something cushioned, mm-hmm. and smack the back of it really good, it will stop doing it for a while. I can't blame Andrew for being afraid to do
wow.
it.
Wow. Really?
The ones I have here aren't affected.
I just thought Jerry was screwing it. With me. But be sure to film it when you do
but
it.
But mine aren't affected, or I would have been smacking the daylights out of that thing.
You know, and it's really annoying, and it's something where I've just, you know, I use the quick toggle and I lock it into portrait, and then I get pissed off when I go to turn it to watch a YouTube video and it doesn't rotate, so. Yes, that you are not the only one, and no, it has not been fixed.
Here's an email we got 11 days ago, according to my email, and I forgot about it, and I'm glad we found it again. Quick warning, this goes back to some of the more adult stuff that we've talked about in the past few weeks. So if, you know, you got kids sitting there with you and you don't want them to hear this email, which is still very, you know, it's PG. I'm not saying anything bad, but just quick heads up. So either fast forward or pause or whatever. But anyway, here we go. This is from, I won't even say the name just in case he didn't want me to. I'm not sure. You said, I didn't listen to the porn part of the podcast from 2 weeks ago. You'll see why in a second, but I did listen to the follow-up last week and I wanted to offer a different perspective. For about 6 years, I was a porn addict. While some might argue that pornography doesn't addict in the same way that smoking, alcohol, drug abuse does, and I would disagree with that, by the way, my experience followed the classic addiction formula, consuming desire for something that grew as I got desensitized to it, one that proved extremely difficult to break. My addiction hurt my grades in college. It hurt my view of women. And I fight the remnants of that addiction to this day. We might argue if pornography is acceptable or not. I'm against it in all forms because of what I read in the Bible about modesty and not lusting after women. But I hope we can agree that a pornography addiction is a serious problem, regardless of what you think of the product itself. Besides the way a porn addiction consumes your time and thought, can lead to relationship breakdowns, as well as, in some cases, violent crimes. Though I never went that far, I definitely saw myself growing desensitized to pornography over time and obsessed with finding more of it. And like an alcoholic, I know that I can never go back. If I did, I'd be ensnared and unable to stop looking at it all again. This is a touchy subject, but I believe the addiction side of porn is something that needs to be talked about. I wanted to offer my perspective to you and also share what I went through with other AC readers and listeners, if you think that would be of value. There's any way I can help, please let me know. And he says, oh, and by the way, what you said about dealing with the issue with kids, a constant conversation about what's going on is absolutely right. And I just wanted to say thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. And no, I completely agree that addiction is addiction. My wife works with a number of recovering alcoholics and addicts, and it's a fascinating discussion. My dad does too, actually. My dad's a judge, if I haven't said before, and for a long time he did a drug court that dealt directly with people with these problems and the ramifications of them, and it's fascinating stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think that goes back to being, it's my wife and I talk about this too, about it just being so easy to get at now and how it means so little. And, you know, like things like Reddit scare the hell out of me, in that it's so easy to hop from something fascinating and something that actually improves on the human experience, and then, you know, gone wild. That was kind of an upper, huh?
Yeah. Well, I am smart enough to know that there are things I don't understand. Women's issues. I have no. this is one of those things. I accept what you've told me as the truth. I don't pretend to understand it, but knowing that it is true and it is something important, I have to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I still find Apple's take on all this really interesting, in that, I mean, it's very hypocritical, and I guess we saw that with Reddit apps last week too.
Yeah.
Some third-party Reddit apps got banned because they had a switch that would allow not safe for work material or not, which I think you should have. But then they wanted,
the apps to come back without the switch,
right, which makes no sense.
Which that makes no sense at all.
They ship with Safari, so
yeah, exactly. Then you have a web browser.
That's part of the issue is that you're trying to have a big centralized take on something like this with lots of gray areas, and as Jerry just expressed, not a lot of insight necessarily into how to deal with each of those things. And you think, well, yeah, how can one store or one company, you know, make the call on that for everybody? That's the troubling part. It's not a black and white issue.
As long as they were, you know, consistent about it. And that's the problem for me. They're not always consistent about it.
Right.
And it's hard for them, or near impossible for them to be consistent about it, because, like I said, it's not like you can just completely turn off all of this stuff. You know, even if you disable Safari, it doesn't make a difference.
We're having that discussion again this week because, you know, my kid wants an Instagram account and her friends have them already, and and not just for, you know, sex stuff, but other reasons why we don't necessarily, you know, want her on that yet.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, if I can teach my kid that the number of likes on something is not the ultimate be all end all.
You know, if you figure out how to teach her that, could you just teach society, please? That would be great. Thanks. Appreciate it.
She doesn't get, like, this is part of my job. I have to post things on Instagram. People need to, you know, see inside my life just a little bit.
And get as many likes as possible, exactly. Please. Like Phil's photos.
Instagram is a perfect example of, if they wanted to make a service for kids between 13 and whatever age of consent may be, whereas, you know, age of consent equals you're old enough to make a little of decisions on yourself. Let's remove the likes. Let's have filters in place that Phil can install Instagram for kids, and she can share with other kids, or she can see what Android Central has to say or what Apple has to share without having to worry about some of the things I see on Instagram that I don't think any child should look at without parental supervision.
And the problem is that it's really hard for them to weigh into that. And of course, Facebook knows that very well, which owns Instagram. They're very aware of the Child Online Privacy Act, and they know that it's really tough. And as soon as they open it up a little bit, so of course they know that there are 12-year-olds on Facebook or 8-year-olds on Instagram, but it's the fact that they explicitly do not allow it, that they, you know, it's not their fault now, and, you know, legally. And that's, you know, that's where it all comes from, which, you know, for better or worse, it just means that it's happening without them being aware of it, you know, which is part of this problem with banning things on services.
They don't actively try to find it either. They don't mind.
Well, no, because that's all that COPPA cares about,
right,
is that they technically don't allow it, and they don't support anyone who is under the proper age in the terms of service, because that's all they're required to do.
And on that note, I think we've had another successful Q&A.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yep. We shall do it again sometime, hopefully. Because we want to, not because Phil feels bad for not getting the voicemail.
and to the fellow that wrote in about pornography and addiction, I mean, I just want to say good for you, man. Good for you. I don't know anybody that was addicted to pornography, but I do have some friends who let their addictions consume themselves. Some recovered and some passed away. And good for you, dude. Just tomorrow, keep doing it.
One day at a time. By the way, if you can't stop listening to this podcast, I'm okay with that.
And be sure to like us on Instagram. Thanks.
All right. So that is it for this week. Next week, we should be back live. I bet. Maybe. We'll see. I'm trying to...
Until something else crazy happens.
Well, I'm looking at the calendar. Let's see what's going on. Oh, why is the stupid calendar signing me out? I think that next week... Yes.
I'll be at Samsung DevCon.
Yes, you will. So how about that?
So we'll have something to talk about there.
Yep. We'll have Huawei P9 at some point, too. We'll get Alex to talk about that. I've got one here.
To get Richard to talk about it, he's using one as well.
Yep. Hashtag 00.
Where did that come from? I didn't quite get that.
Because it's the two cameras next to each other look like OO. So they were trying to.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Just like hashtag power of 10, it kind of.
Well, that made lost more sense. No. All right. Thank you all so much for putting up with us again this week. Again, send your voicemails and emails to podcast@androidcentral.com. That's it. See y'all.
Later.
Bye.
still here? Good. So I can tell you that this episode of the Android Central podcast was brought to you by Unity, the free personal media server. Unity makes it easy to connect your devices and get unlimited access to all your content on the go. Just visit youunity.com to get your Unity for free.